It's just waves of vibrating air. It's just your voice.
Touch at a distance.
Beginning your voice box compresses air, and that air travels through space and time into my ear. A little tunnel. Waves of diffuse vibrating air focused and channeled into my eardrum.
And that, friends, is the magic of audio. Welcome to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Steve Brown sitting in for Ann Fisher again today. And you just heard a clip from the public radio show Radio Lab explaining that when you hear sound, what you're really doing is sensing waves of vibrating air. The ability to hear is one of the first human senses to develop, and sound is the oldest method of human communication. It's one way people tell stories, and it's the only way we here on radio can tell stories. While radio often functions as a source of news, it's also a way to express human experiences through sound. Today we're talking about telling stories through radio, using journalistic forms, narratives, and even radio art. Later in the program, we'll be joined by American Public Media senior producer Katie Davis to talk about her approach to radio narrative. Joining us now is John Bewin. He's the co-editor of the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound, and he's also the audio program director for Duke University's Center of Documentary Studies. John Bewin, welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Thank you so much. What exactly makes compelling audio and compelling radio?
Well, I think storytelling is the surest way to make really compelling, vivid radio. And I think that's something that I think we're in a very interesting time where there's been a powerful realization of that. In public radio, in our medium, and I'm a longtime public radio journalist and documentary maker myself, that most of what we do is tell facts and explore issues, and that's good, and it's useful, and it's an important thing to do. But there's been a kind of on the fringes of the sort of mainstream news broadcasts that we do, a growing number of people doing really powerful, compelling work that sort of puts storytelling at the forefront. And whether that's someone sitting in front of a microphone and telling a story about something that happened to them, which is sort of, I suppose, the bread and butter of programs like This American Life, or producers who take their microphones out and let us listen in on life happening in a more kind of documentary style. I think there's been a period of some really interesting work being done.
You point out in the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound, that in 2003, Columbia University journalism professor Samuel Friedman wrote that we're living in the golden age of radio documentary. You say you agreed at the time. Why is that, and are we still in that golden age of radio documentaries?
I think we are. With a contraction in the economy, that I think has slowed the growth. For instance, there were some radio shows that provided a lot of room for some of the more interesting work and for emerging people like Day to Day and Weekend America that went off the air. And that has been, that's been a bit of a blow. And of course, it's just tougher than ever to get grants and to raise money outside of, if you're not, say, on salary at one of the networks. So that certainly, all of that hasn't helped, but I think the general trend is that, yes, we are. And isn't that an interesting idea? Usually when people talk about the golden age of radio, you're talking about the 1930s and 40s, and the sort of the idea that when TV emerged, that was sort of, radio was sort of done, right, at that point, except as a kind of a, to listen to music in your car. But I think it's really striking that over these last 15, 20 years that there has been a kind of a flowering of nonfiction storytelling on radio.
And why exactly is radio so powerful? My old boss used to call it the original wireless technology. And that gets at its practicality for communicating with the masses. But good radio is so moving. I mean, it's really so touching. It's emotional.
Yeah. Well, and right. I think, and it goes to what is often seen as the weakness of the huge weakness of radio, namely, no pictures. But I think that makes it a closer cousin of of the written word, of literature, in the sense that then the pictures get made, get generated by the imagination of the listener when the storytelling is done powerfully. And, you know, some of us radio people like to say radio has the best pictures. And I think that can often be true. Radio I like to refer to it as stories told in the dark, which is really the primordial way, the primordial medium for storytelling, for human beings to sit around and tell each other a story long before there was any other, long before the written word even, let alone film and photography and that sort of thing. So it's, radio is the modern medium that comes the closest to that.
We're talking about the art of storytelling and radio with John Biewen. He's the co-editor of the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound. Listeners, give us a call if you have a question for John, a question about radio or storytelling or really anything else. Just give us a call, 614-292-8513. Again, that number is 614-292-8513. You can also email allsides@wosu.org, and you can also find the All Sides with Ann Fisher page on Facebook. John, you write that when you initially started into this venture, you got some advice to not call your audio programs documentaries. Why was that?
Right, and that I was talking about when I was... a correspondent for many years for American Radio Works, now from American Public Media. And when we were first starting out in the late 90s, a programming executive in the public radio system said that don't call these shows documentaries. And that came from this idea, I think. If you think back, for people who are a little older, think back to the way to what that word evoked for a lot of us in the 20th century, and that was these sort of dry informational programs on television or films that you sat through in school, and it was generally not very entertaining, right? And I think it reflected, and I think that's really changed through not only in radio but also in film, that the documentary form has really come to life in the last decade or two, with people just doing more engaging and entertaining stuff with the medium. And so as I write in the introduction to the book, a few years later, it helped also by things like This American Life and Michael Moore, which of course is not radio, but there was just this. It started to be safer to
documentaries. Kind of became cool.
Yeah, documentary has become at least borderline cool, I think, after being really very much the opposite 20 years ago.
Radio is still a pretty primitive technology, even though people are getting more and more creative with it. How has the internet changed all of this? How has it changed your job? I know it's changed my job a lot. How would you say it's changed radio, even things like Transom and Public Radio Exchange, which are their websites big within the public radio community? How have things like that changed the business and changed the technology?
Yeah, in many ways. I mean, one thing is just the fact that when you make an audio piece now, it has a life beyond that one or two times that it comes out of people's radios. It used to be, and I go back to the early 80s as a public radio reporter, the stuff, it aired and just disappeared in literally into the ether for all time. Mm-hmm. Now it lives, but then also it's become a multimedia. It's created opportunities for multimedia work to combine photography and other elements and sort of build other things around what is maybe still primarily an audio medium. There's you mentioned Transom. PRX, which is a way for producers and including emerging upstart producers to get their work out into the world without necessarily having. It used to be you just had to pray that you could sell it to a radio station or to a radio network. Now you can just sort of put it out there yourself. So there's a lot of ways, and yeah, it's really we're sort of taking it for granted now, but it's definitely changed things for us.
Is it an odd venture to write a book about a medium that you hear?
Yeah, we talked about that again in the book, and I quote various people have said this, but I think Elvis Costello may have been the first to say that you can't. It's stupid to write Or what did he say? Writing about music is like dancing about architecture. This idea that to write on the mute page about an auditory medium is, it just doesn't come across. And I actually disagree with that. I think you can write about radio, but in recognition of that, we did create a website, realityradiobook.org, that has links to most of the audio pieces that are written about in the book, so you can go there and listen to them as you're reading the book.
We'll get into the nuts and the bolts of the book in our next segment here in just a few minutes, but why did you decide to compile this book? Obviously, you're able to write about radio, but why do it?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could claim credit for having had the idea. I didn't. I work at the Center for Documentary Studies, as you mentioned, and some colleagues here who were planning a series of books on contemporary documentary work in various mediums sort of came to me and said, how would you like to edit a book about radio? And I immediately thought, geez, it hadn't occurred to me to be the one to do it, but we sure need one. And and just in recognition of things like that quote earlier, Samuel Friedman's, that we're in the golden age of documentary radio, I really think that's true, and it just seemed to me to be worth an important thing to do to sort of document this generation of radio makers. And also, you know, the book is sort of aimed at two audiences. One, fans, really, and I really do think that there are people who love this work enough, who are fans of This American Life, Radio Diaries, The Kitchen Sisters, on and on, who would think in the same way that you might like to read a book by a favorite fiction writer about their craft, to read an essay by these people about how they do what they do and why they do it the way they do it. Secondly, it's aimed at people who, students and people who would like to try their hand at this kind of work. It's not an instructional book, but it is kind of an inspirational book.
It is a very interactive book. Listeners, we're talking with John Biewen. He's the co-editor of the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories and Sound. He's also the audio program director for the Duke University Center of Documentary Studies. If you have a question or comment about documentaries, about radio, about storytelling, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Again, that's 614-292-8513. We're going to take a quick break, and after that break, we'll be joined by Katie Davis, the senior producer of The Story. That's a national radio show from American Public Media. You're listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News.
The weather forecast for Central Ohio today is good news. Sunny skies and a high of 85 degrees. Tonight, clear skies. The overnight low 67. On Friday, more sunshine, a little warmer though, a high of 91. Friday night, the clouds roll in, a low of 71. By Saturday, mostly cloudy, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, and a high of 89 degrees. Get daily updates from the WOSU Newsroom by signing up for our daily News Loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email. You can also connect with our news team by following WOSU News on Twitter or liking our station on Facebook.
Support for 89.7 comes from Promo West Productions, presenting Bela Fleck and the original Flecktones and Bruce Hornsby and the Noisemakers on August 9th at the LC Lifestyle Communities Pavilion Outdoor Amphitheater. Information at promowestlive.com.
Keep in touch with the arts by going to wosu.org/artzine to find out more.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Steve Brown, keeping the seat warm for Ann Fisher through today. And today on All Sides, we're talking about radio as a means to tell true stories and sound. Still with us is John Biewen. He's the co-editor of Reality Radio, Telling the True Stories and Sound. And he's also the director of a radio documentary program at Duke University in North Carolina. And on the line now as well is Katie Davis. She's the senior producer of The Story. That's a national radio show from American Public Media. She's also a regular commentator on NPR's All Things Considered and a contributor to This American Life. and she's one of the authors featured in John Bewin's new book. Katie Davis, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Hello, John. And
hi, Katie.
Katie, we've been talking about the art of storytelling. Tell us about the radio series, The Story.
Absolutely. Well, we do an hour 5 days a week, and we are in search of people's stories, stories that they feel that they really have to tell. And we bring them in, and we interview them. Sometimes we don't interview them. We just let them tell their story and present it. And our feeling is that really everyone has at least one story that needs to be told, probably many more than that.
Very basic, simple storytelling.
Yes,
at its root. Sure. Yes. How do you find people for the series?
Well, a lot of people write into us. They hear stories, and we're always searching. And frankly, I find my best stories like sort of listening in on things at sort of the grocery store, or if I go into a hardware store and I'm talking to a gentleman who's owned it for 50 years, I may end up talking to him about like the economy, and then I'll figure out an interesting story that reflects a personal experience of the economy. So you're really like just sort of listening all the time. And in fact, we are all always telling stories. We just don't give ourselves credit. You know, you see your friend and you start telling them about the three vultures outside your office window that have been hovering there all day, you know, and that's a story.
Sure.
And that is happening at my window. I want you guys to know that.
Yeah, sure. You've lived most of your life in the Adams Morgan neighborhood in Washington, D.C. In fact, you've chosen to stay there and become involved with the community, and you're the founder and director of the Urban Rangers Youth Corps that gives kids tools for life in the Adams Morgan neighborhood. The kids in your neighborhood call you Katie Divas, is that right?
Yeah, D-I-V-A-S, as in diva.
Tell us about your work there and how it started.
Absolutely. I was a traditional storyteller, a traditional reporter at NPR for a long time, about 15 years, and I took a break. And in that break, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and I was spending a lot of time sitting on my porch. And the kids have just a sort of an incredible sense of who has time and who will truly listen to them. And the kids really found me, and they started asking to borrow a wrench and could they store this bike under my porch. Or then another neighbor, a janitor down the street, he decided to start lugging old bikes up to my porch, and it became a center for the kids in the neighborhood, and a lot of things grew out of that.
I do believe we have a clip from your series, Neighborhood Series. This is where you tell your story of attempting to coach a boys' basketball team.
Okay.
Spalding on sidewalk. And I know the guys are coming. They have a game today, and they show up at my house an hour early, itching to play. They are 15, 16, 17, and 18 years old, some lumbering and huge, others wiry in constant motion.
Katie, that's a good example of the work you do there?
Yes. That was another instance of kids really having a need. They wanted to get together and have a team, and they did not have a coach. And there I was sitting on my porch, and they drafted me. You know, it was a classic NBA draft. And they needed me, and the story goes on. And after a while, I realize I really do not have the chops to literally coach them. I bring my brother, and then I actually start paying a professional basketball coach to come in and practice with us. And it was the best thing to do. Really.
Was it hard to report on something that you're intensely involved in?
Yes, it's very hard, actually. I mean, in some way, you have much more information than you ever do when you're writing a story as a reporter. You have, like, you know exactly what's going on between the lines. But on the other hand, you know these people, maybe love them, maybe frustrated with them, and that you have to be fair to them as you write. You can't cut them too many breaks, and at the same time, you can't be sort of too tough on them. So it is an interesting area to write in, and I love it.
One program that a lot of people think of when we talk about public radio and storytelling is This American Life, a show John referenced in the first segment and a show you're a contributor to, Katie. It's become a popular radio program since it was first introduced in 1995. Every story has a surprising twist. Our listeners probably very well know the program. We carry it here. Ira Glass wrote an essay for your book, John, about harnessing luck, how luck is always a part of asking the right questions to get to the big ideas, as he calls them, that interest people. Here's a cut from an interview that he'd had with Adam Davidson, a regular contributor to This American Life.
And Adam, what would the 16-year-old you think of you now?
I think he'd be really disappointed. I think he'd be really sad.
Because you're not the Prime Minister of Israel?
Yeah, because I just have such a small life.
And that's perfect Ira Glass right there, as anyone who listens to Ira Glass knows it. John or Katie, why is Ira Glass such a great storyteller? What does he do that's so perfect?
Well, I'll try that. I mean, what he writes about in the essay, and this is what I think is surprising, because Ira Glass, of all people, is someone that we think of as having this amazing charisma and talent and kind of ear and all of that. And all of that is absolutely true. But what he writes about in the essay is hard work. And in that very instance, he describes in the essay, he sort of takes that story apart. And there Adam Davidson is telling about a diary that he wrote and reading from a diary that he wrote as a teenager when he envisioned himself completely seriously as the future prime minister of Israel. And so, you know, now 15 years later, he's kind of cringing at that teenage version of himself, but also coming to terms with, you know, the slightly less grand life that he's now living. And Ira talks about sort of, it's funny and it's interesting, but having asked dozens of questions in order to get this nugget of gold that we just heard there, where he really sort of hits on, you know, a kind of universal theme and a truth that comes out of this. And so he talks about how much effort goes into every story on This American Life, and also talks about how many years he spent getting good at what he does. And so I think that's a lesson, I think, for all of us doing creative work, is that, you know, it helps to be a genius, but regardless, you sort of just need to stay at it, right, and keep trying.
You just need to get lucky sometimes. And yeah, he was speaking completely from the heart there, as we've been saying. Katie, is that something that you find hard to find among your the people you're interviewing, among your sources, getting them to really speak from the heart?
Well, no, if you have the time. I mean, my method is over time, usually. Like Ira, I have been at the receiving end of Ira's questions, either because he's been asking me about a story that I've written or just at knowing him over the years. And he is just insanely curious, and he will ask over and over and come at the issue from different angles. My method is a little different. What I will do is get to know someone and slowly get to know their story. And I might not even take the microphone and sit down with them until I've known them for several years. And then I might interview them three or four times. So it's just a different so if they're telling me, oh, yeah, I used to be the best dancer in the neighborhood, but I know from talking to them over time and talking to their friends and then getting them later to tell me that story again, that they were just, you know, BSing me at that point. So so that's how I get to the truth. And all of it takes a long kind of time and patience.
Sure. We do have a Facebook message from James. While in South Texas some years ago, a lot of talk and documentary radio was broadcast on shortwave radio as well as on pirate low-power FM stations. James writes that shortwave is really old technology but still is active, especially in many rural areas. You can buy a Polestar shortwave receiver made here in Ohio. It costs about $750, so it's not cheap. But James says it opens up a whole world of documentary radio not available through traditional media outlets. I've never really never dabbled in the shortwave radio medium, but there you go. I think we're gonna take a somber tone here. This is next audio clip we're gonna use is from Maria Martin, another woman who wrote an essay for this book. We're going to play a cut here from Santa Maria, A Tale of One Village. That's a series that Maria worked on. She documented the experience of a massacre survivor named Edwin. This is a pretty long soundbite, just over a minute, but it's just an incredible piece of sound here. And a warning to our listeners, there is some strong imagery here. So let's hear this this sound clip from Edwin.
Solo recuerdo que me metí entre la vegetación, como te decía, hay plantas que cortan a otros, que son espinas, y me metí así. Y el ejército con toda su carga que llega no puede pasar entre eso. Y no me fui muy lejos.
I only remember running. When I heard the gunshots and screams, I didn't turn around. There was a fallen tree trunk and there I hid. Then I heard a little girl crying and it was my little sister. It seemed as if I were watching a play. Then I saw a soldier lift her up and take out his knife, and
y cuando vi un soldado agarró, levantó a mi hermanita, sacó su cuchillo y
he took her arm and cut it off and threw it away. I did not understand what I was seeing. I did not know what death was. Later, when the soldiers left, I went back where the bodies lay in a circle and I laid down with them, waiting for them to wake up. My mother, my grandmother, my cousins and uncles, my little sister. I began to talk to them. Mother, grandmother. They wouldn't answer. They wouldn't wake up.
I have to be honest, that might be the single most compelling piece of audio I've ever heard. And Maria Martin chose to keep the native Spanish language as part of that narrative. I don't speak Spanish at all, but the native language made it so much more compelling. Again, that might be the single most compelling piece of audio I've ever heard.
Well, I mean, one thing that's really powerful, too, and what's so strong about radio is that this man is telling the story, and you as a listener, you merge and you create that image, a very disturbing image, but you are really kind of part of the storytelling, and that is really powerful, and she made sure that he didn't slip under the translator for too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think this is an example of and this is a specific story that I had heard, and I asked Maria to write about it in her essay, and specifically about her use of the way that she handles the original Spanish, and we get to hear so much of it, which is unusual, as you point out, Steve. A lot of times there'll be about 5 seconds of it, and then it's dipped under, and we just hear the voiceover. But in this case, also, you're hearing so much emotion in that voice, and you don't need, as you say, to know a word of Spanish to get the power of the way that it's being said. And so it's just that attention to detail, the crafting, the choice that she made of the voiceover voice being so, I don't know, just right, and the attention to detail. I like to say that documentary, you know, radio, one way to distinguish it sort of from the day-to-day news reporting that we're used to is that it takes a lot longer to do and it sounds like it. And this is true here, just the crafting that she's done with that.
What's been the reaction to that series that piece came from? It's Santa Maria, A Tale of One Village. I had not heard of that. What was the reaction to that?
The larger project was After the Wars, Después de las Guerras, which is a multi-hour project about the civil wars in Central America in the 80s. And, I don't know. It aired on a bunch of stations.
Yeah.
But that was an extraordinary moment, I agree, from that project.
Yeah, and so often we're distanced from the victims of war. You turn on the television and it's all war reporting, it seems like. But in this piece, we immediately identify with the narrator and then we realize that he's a regular human being just like us, and leaving that Spanish in there was pretty effective. Again, we're talking with John Bewin, the co-editor of the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound. and he's also the audio program director for Duke University's Center of Documentary Studies. And also on the line with us is Katie Davis. She's the senior producer of The Story, a radio show from American Public Media, and she's also one of the authors featured in the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories Through Sound. Katie, you left NPR in the mid-1990s and went back to Adams Market in D.C. It's there that you began telling these stories about your neighborhood community. Why did you do that?
Well, I was interested in telling stories in a different way. You know, I had become really good at writing, you know, compelling good news stories, but for the most part, there was only a 20-second clip of someone. I mean, I'll just tell you a quick story. I was covering the fact that the Washington, D.C. at that time had a very high homicide rate and a high level of guns on the street. So I went and talked to a police officer. I drove around with him. We drove down an alley and saw a kid, and the cop stopped the kid. He didn't have a gun, but I was just thinking, who are these kids, you know, that are getting in trouble and hanging out in the alley late at night? And, you know, my story wasn't answering that. So when I did leave NPR, I was interested in beginning to know a young kids in my neighborhood in depth, not just sort of with labels, and know the complexity of their story, and where it fit in the whole story of my neighborhood and the city. So that's what I did. It was a kind of a desire to tell a more nuanced and complex story, not put someone in a box.
I've never been to the Adams Morgan neighborhood. I have heard it's not the fanciest neighborhood. I hope I don't sound disrespectful when I say that. Do any of your friends ask you why you still live there?
Oh, no. Well, if they know me, they know I'm living in my family home that I've lived since I was 10. But by the way, I mean, that home is still there. Mm-hmm. I right now live in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, to produce the story. But
just down the road from me, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Next door.
But no, people don't ask me that. When I was growing up, the kids at the high school that I went to, they were not allowed to come to the neighborhood. It was sort of tough, and it still has that element. But no, people want to be together, living with different kinds of people. But the thing is, they don't really take the time to talk to them and listen to them. So that's sort of what I do.
Go ahead, John.
If I can just add something, Steve. I mean, Katie is her essay, by the way, is absolutely gorgeous, and it's one that often gets singled out by people, including maybe especially radio people, in their reaction to the book. So I'll just brag on Katie there for a minute. But another thing I wanted to say about it, one of the things that, and this is coming through in the conversation, I think, but. It's one of the things that has been a trend in that's represented in this sort of this book and the celebration of this work has been people moving away from the kind of standard detached journalist's perspective in the relationship to the person they're interviewing. And Katie is a really interesting example of that, having gone from being that reporter who visits, does an interview, and sort of, you know, uses a soundbite from someone to someone who has a relationship. And then she also then puts herself and talks about her relationship with those kids in these stories, in those neighborhood stories, that series she did. So it's just a different kind of relationship, and NPR mm-hmm. had to handle it by calling her stories commentaries, which, they weren't commentaries in the ordinary sense. They were produced pieces that took you to this place. But just because her relationship was different with the subjects, they had to find a way to, you know, to characterize that.
Yeah, reading the very beginning of her essay titled Covering Home, it reads, "I hold my microphone in my lap as the cop turns up 15th Street. Lots of guns where I'm taking you. I know he's not bragging. The year has barely started, and D.C. is counting up shootings on the streets and in schools." So that's a pretty good indication.
And, and that was the story that I told earlier. I can tell you about one that, one of the things I did was work with bikes with kids, and there were two kids in my bike group, and I had given them some money to go up and buy an inner tube, two inner tubes, so they could go on a bike ride, which is one way to get out of the neighborhood and have a kind of different experience. So they went to the local bike shop that they've been going to their whole life, and the manager, they left, and then the manager called me and told me that they had stolen something. And I just said, no, I said, there's no reason. I gave them money. I know these kids really well. They own their own bikes. And he got ready to call the police, and I had to run out and see if I could find them. And then I found them, and we went to the bike shop, and they showed us the video, and the manager was standing right there. I said, see, look, right there, that's them on the tape. And it wasn't them. And he just couldn't see them. You know, he just saw two young black men. He couldn't see that these kids looked different and that were customers of the store. And then just briefly, I was so angry about that. I was going to write, I didn't do this, but I was going to write, you know, protest letters to the Washington Post about this kind of racism. But what I did was I just let it sit for a while. And then I talked to the manager about doing diversity training with his staff. But I couldn't do that in the moment. I had to wait like 3 months because I was so mad at the manager. So I really was involved. You know, I'm really a player in these stories as much as an observer.
Sure.
It's tricky. Yeah.
We're talking about radio and the art of storytelling with John Biewen. He's the co-editor of the book Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound. He's also audio program director for Duke University's Center of Documentary Studies. Also with us on the line is Katie Davis. She wrote an essay for that book, and she's also a senior producer of The Story. That's a national radio program from American Public Media. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Listeners, give us a call, 292-8513. Again, 292-8513. You're listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Andy Serkis describes playing an ape in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He did it with the help of computer-generated imagery, like he did in the Lord of the Rings films playing Gollum, whose tortured voice was inspired by Serkis's cat coughing up fur balls.
You see this fur about to be chucked up, and then they sort of go...
Join us.
Fresh Air comes your way starting at 12 noon today in about 17 minutes here on 89.7 NPR News. The weather is good news for today anyway, and probably tomorrow. High today 85 under sunny skies. Clear skies tonight and a low of 67. On Friday, sunny. Tomorrow's high 91, but then clouds Friday night. An overnight low of 71. By Saturday, mostly cloudy and a good chance of showers and or thunderstorms. And the high on Saturday is predicted to be 89 degrees. Join WOSU and superstar Andrea Bocelli as he returns to his native Italy for a concert of his greatest hits and will also perform many new songs. It was taped, the program, in the rolling countryside around the ancient Tuscan village of Volterra. Bocelli is joined by special guests including Chris Botti, Heather Headley, Kenny G, David Foster, Lung Lung, and Sarah Brightman. It's an evening of romantic favorites, and you're invited to watch great performances, Andrea Bocelli, live in Tuscany tomorrow night, Friday, at 9 p.m. on WOSU TV 34.
Good morning and welcome back to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Steve Brown sitting in for Ann Fisher. In this hour, we're talking about documentaries and storytelling on the radio. Still with us is John Biewen and Katie Davis. John is the co-editor of Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound, and Katie is one of the contributors to the book. Radio documentaries, like most things, are in a constant state of evolution. Some producers want to take storytelling on radio to a different, even more artistic level. That's the case with Chris Brooks, as we'll hear in this next clip here.
Are we on the air now?
Can you hear me?
On the air.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear anything?
What is on the air?
Well, you see, the first actual communication was when one person spoke to another person and they understood what they were saying. And then it goes on for thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years.
And Brooks recorded that segment to commemorate the invention of radio. John, what exactly was Chris Brooks trying to do there?
Yeah, well, Chris is he's an independent producer based in Canada, way out on the coast of Newfoundland, and he's just a master of the craft. This is the beginning of a piece that is in part a kind of a biography of Marconi, the inventor or one of the inventors of radio, but he starts it in this very kind of elliptical way, impressionistic way, where he's just taking bits from the piece and kind of throwing them at you, right? And so he's, and this is the kind of thing he likes to say that he doesn't like to just kind of lay it out for you. He wants you to kind of, he's okay if you spend a couple of minutes not entirely sure what's going on, but then your mind kind of pieces it together. So it is a more kind of artistic approach, and it's something that's more common in Europe, Australia, Canada, kind of everywhere but the U.S., where we're despite the creativity of the kind of work that we're talking about and the storytelling, which we're wonderful, I think we're getting to be quite good at narrative work on public radio, it's still pretty linear. We kind of take the listener by the hand and they know what's going on all the time. This is a more impressionistic approach.
Katie, what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, I like not knowing where I am when I'm listening to a piece. That's not a widely shared point of view. Like if you work for NPR or American Public Media, you'll often hear, like, I was very confused at the first minute of that piece. And I'm thinking, yeah, I knew you would be confused. I wanted you to be confused. But it's not celebrated. So I like that. And I also really like that little snippet in there that said, hey, the first radio really first started when one person told another person a story. I mean, you know, it is that basic at one level. So I have to go listen to the whole piece.
Sure. And Katie Davis, I understand you have to hop off the line, but I really thank you for appearing on our show this morning. Katie Davis is the senior producer of The Story, a national radio program from American Public Media. And she's also one of the authors featured in John Bewin's book, Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound. And she joined us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Katie Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. And I'll talk to you later, John. Okay.
See you soon. Bye.
Take care. John, continuing with this look at artistic radio pieces, I don't think a lot of people have really thought about art on the radio. You know, classical music is certainly a form of art, and journalism, you could argue, I guess, is a form of art. But I don't know how many people have really thought about art on the radio.
Yeah, no, exactly, and we really don't have it in this country to speak of. I mean, you take a show like Radiolab, which you started the hour with, and there's some really wild production that goes on, and a lot of artistry, I would say. But again, yeah, it's still all sort of in the service of information and of getting stuff across, and there's just a tradition, and I can't claim, you know, it's not that if you turn on the radio in Canada that just any hour of the day or night you're going to be getting this audio art. That's not true. It's still a pretty small thread even in those places, but these other countries do kind of set aside a little more space, and there is a tradition of audio art. And then you ask, well, what's this audio art doing in a book about radio documentary? This kind of audio art is also documentary because it's telling true stories and it's dealing with factual material, interviews, archival material, and so it's just another way of doing interesting stuff with that material.
Listeners, if you have a question for John Bewin about radio, about storytelling on the radio, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Again, our phone number is 614-292-8513. And John, you talked about Radiolab. We played that clip in the beginning of the show. We carry a lot of their stuff, especially on Sunday afternoons. But tell us more about Radiolab and the really innovative work they're doing.
Yeah, well, I think what, you know, they've done a few things that are quite new and fresh. One thing that's striking about Radiolab is, you know, when we talk about, there's oftentimes you talk about work that's along a spectrum ranging from really creative and innovative on the one hand and very informative on the other, as if those things are in competition or mutually exclusive. And oftentimes people do much more of one than the other, right? The informational stuff maybe isn't all that, is pretty straightforward in its approach and vice versa. Well, Radiolab combines, I think, some of the most kind of cutting-edge information. I feel like I learn more from listening to that show than just about anything else on the radio about science and ideas. And at the same time, they're just doing, the lab idea is very appropriate too, in the sense that they're really playing with the medium and they're introducing sound effects. And another thing they do is the approach to the narration or the hosting, where Jad Abumrad and Robert Krulwich, who of course is a legendary public radio guy, they host the show, but they don't do it in the conventional sense of having a script in front of them and reading. It's kind of they have some kind of loose notes in front of them and they know what they want to cover, but it's also kind of performed, and it's ad-libbed to a certain extent.
It's very quick, very back and forth.
Yes, and then layered and highly produced after that. And so it's really, it's just nobody's quite done what they're doing with that show before, and it's sort of, you know, Ira Glass, of course, who broke through with This American Life. Now he calls Radiolab his favorite radio show, you know. So it's sort of become the newer show to just get lots of fans who flock to it.
Yeah, and it really crushes just about every stereotype about public radio being old and stodgy. It's really, really fast, and it's a really interesting show. I love it. It's a lot of people don't, but it's really edgy, and it's a really cool show. Here's another example of art on the radio. Another woman featured in your book, Dee Mae Roberts. She wrote an essay, and she produced a series of documentaries called In the Mix. And here's an excerpt from a show on being mixed race.
My name is Robert Farid Karimi, and I'm a performance artist, and I'm half Iranian and half Guatemalan. You ever notice when people call you exotic, they look at you like you're some sort of experiment? I mean, when I tell people that I'm half Iranian and half Guatemalan, they just stop and ogle. But you know the question that always upsets me more than anything else is when they ask, Robert, how did your parents meet?
John Biewen, that's so simple yet so effective on a guttural level.
Yeah, guttural level. Nicely chosen words, Pete. Yeah, it's great. And she's, I actually have not heard that before. That's a clip that I hadn't heard. Dee Mae is wonderful. And she's someone who does stuff across the whole range, from very, you know, sort of informational, historical documentary to stuff that's very, very innovative and interesting audio art. And notice one thing she's doing there is very simple. It's just editing that man's speech so that just the sort of standard breaths have been cut out, right? So one word kind of comes on top of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting, right? As a listener, you get what she's done, and it just moves it along a little quicker, and it's just a kind of interesting effect. I like that a lot. That's good stuff.
Yeah, and she used some auto-tune in there, it sounded like, as well. I think Radiolab does that quite a bit, just to play with the voices, just to keep your ears kind of always moving.
Yeah. And this is stuff, too, and this is a theme that I talk about of the work in the book, is that it's these are things that you wouldn't be able to do. It wouldn't kind of be appropriate to do in a more straightforward news, you know, environment. So there's a kind of an embrace of subjectivity that the producer is kind of injecting his or herself into the work in a little bit more overt way. And that's one thing that characterizes some of this work.
We don't have a clip to play from this next woman, and I'm sure I'll butcher her name. Is it Cherie DeLisle?
Sherry DeLisle.
Sherry DeLisle. I understand she's worked with some of her favorite writers and musicians to create radio art that, according to your website, finds a true meeting between sound and story. What exactly do you mean by that?
Oh, she's phenomenal, and she's another person I was going to mention. Yeah, along with Chris Brooks, there's Sherry DeLisle, another Australian producer, Natalie Kestacher, and a British producer, Alan Hall, that sort of represent the audio art wing of the craft for us in the book. Sherry, what she does is, for instance, there's a piece that she did about the late avant-garde artist, I'm blanking on his name, Derek, I can't believe, filmmaker. It'll come to me. But she went to his home on the coast of England, and his lover, Keith, was still living there. And it, instead of just doing a kind of straightforward walk around, get to know this place, because he had this remarkable place where he'd built this sculpture garden sort of on this fishing village on the coast, that she uses all these clanking sounds that were made by the that can be made from the objects in his yard, and uses the Keith's voice almost as a kind of as a musical element as well, and turns it into so you get kind of a visit to this place, but it's also almost a musical composition. It's hard to describe, but it's quite spellbinding.
Very avant-garde in its own right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And that's part of and she writes about this. She doesn't have, there isn't a Sherry DeLisle sound. There isn't a Sherry DeLisle approach to an audio piece. She approaches each one fresh and tries to kind of marry her approach, to feel her way into it and approach it in a way that fits the subject that she's. So in this case, it was in keeping with the kind of the spirit of the artist she was profiling.
A show you touched on earlier, but we haven't really delved into, it's a show that Sherry DeLisle worked on, The Next Big Thing, kind of paved the way for a lot of this cutting-edge radio. Tell us about The Next Big Thing.
Right, The Next Big Thing came from WNYC. I think it went on the air a few years after This American Life, and it was only on the air for a few years, and it went out of business. But it was an effort to... it really was sort of more experimental than This American Life. It did used some of that informality and that sense of play with the medium, but went further in just sort of trying different stuff. And Emily Botine, who was one of the producers of the show, Dean Olsher was the host, but Emily Botine worked behind the scenes and did a lot of sort of the thinking behind some of those interesting pieces. And she writes an essay in the book, and she compares it to her earlier life as a sous chef in fine restaurants in New York City, as sort of that person working behind the scenes but sort of crafting this fascinating stuff.
Well, how much farther can the medium go? What's the that's a tough question to answer, but how much more can radio evolve?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be really interesting to say. I wish that I could answer that in the sense of saying, "Well, Steve, here's what's going to happen."
Yeah.
Because I'm apparently not that person. You know, I'm middle-aged, and you know, I think what's going to be interesting is to hear what young people do next. I know one young guy, for instance, who really wants to push Verite and try to figure out how can we get more kind of raw experience on the air, minimizing even further the kind of mediating voice, even the self-narrating kind of mediating voice. And I frankly don't know. I don't know if it's going to work. But there are people out there thinking about things like that. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go, but I think it will continue to evolve. These days, you know, a lot of sort of the equivalent of the shortwave radio is podcasts, mm-hmm. where anybody can just make something and put it up there for the world to hear. And that's a kind of playground for people to try stuff to push the envelope.
Yeah, well, it's an exciting medium, and I'm hopeful for the future. John Bewin is the co-editor of the new book, Reality Radio, Telling True Stories in Sound. John, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It was fun.
Thank you so much. And you've been listening to All Sides here on WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.